All right. Good morning, everybody. My name is Adam Hall. I am part of the Azure Information Protection Engineering team. I lead the customer success part of the product group. And what that means is I get to spend a lot of time with people such as yourselves from customers and partners. I lead a team of 13 people that are all around the world to help people such as yourselves come up to speed with what we do, take feedback on the product, help you understand what it can do, and help you get deployed. This is kind of like the overview session for Azure Information Protection. I want to take you through what it actually is, what the history looks like, where we're going with it, show you it in action. If you saw the keynotes yesterday, you would have seen touches of it. I'm going to give you a little bit of everything, and then we have additional sessions, and my team are down on the expo hall floor as well. So that's kind of the idea on the way through. If you have questions, please, if you can, make it to the mic. If you can't, yell it out and I'll repeat it so that it gets recorded and everybody can see it online and so on afterwards. So a couple of links there. We run the @RMSGuy Twitter handle, which was kind of useful back when it was just RMS, but now that we're IP, we might have to change that and we'll figure that one out. But if you follow that, you'll always have the latest updates when we do a blog, when there's additional functionality, a feature gets released, whatever the case may be. Excuse me. And then askipteam@microsoft.com is a mailbox that my team run. We have an SLA on it. We are always monitoring that mailbox. So if you have a question, it doesn't matter what it is about information protection, Azure Information Protection, send it to that alias. I have people who monitor that mailbox all around the world. So pretty much it's a follow the sun model. We always will get back to you. If we don't know the answer, we will get it for you. But that's basically the one place to come for all information. We do have a Yammer site as well, which you can join and engage with us. So a couple of setup slides that you will either be seeing for the first time now and see a lot more if you go to other EMS sessions, or you may have seen it yesterday as well. We are part of the Enterprise and Mobility, Enterprise Mobility and Security Suite now. I'll change the name. We are part of this. The suite contained Azure Active Directory, Azure Information Protection, ATA, CAS, Intune, and so on, to really help customers with not only the mobility side, but the security as well. That is part of the suite. It's a big beast. There's a lot to it. This is a very complex slide, and there's a lot that goes on. There's lots of products in there. They're starting to talk to each other. Everything from identity-driven security with Azure Active Directory all the way down to what we do at the data layer, managing the mobile device, managing what users are doing with SaaS applications and so on, and then detecting threats on-premises with your domain controllers. We kind of sit in the middle of all of that, and we're integrating with everything around there. And so today, I want to take you through what it means for Azure Information Protection, how we fit into that, and sort of what our history looks like and where we're going from here. So, a question for the crowd. Three levels, and raise your hand on the one that applies to you. Let's start with the bottom level. We've got three levels. How much control do you feel you have over information within your business or the customers you work on? So who feels okay about it? Who feels pretty good? You've got a good level of understanding of who's doing what and where that information is. Raise your hand if you feel okay. Not very many. All right, who feels very good that they've got an awesome handle on what's going on and you know exactly what data, where data is and who's accessing it and where in the world and so on? Who feels awesome? And then who feels exceptional? You can respond. When something goes wrong, you can get the data back. No one. Wow, I thought I'd get more than that. So you're either really early in the morning, you haven't had enough coffee, or I only got three hands and the rest of you are scared crapless right now. One of these things is happening. Okay, so let's start. Hopefully you feel pretty good about your traditional IT environment, the on-premises environment. On-premises is usually fairly green, different shades of green for different customers as to how good you feel about that. Based on the poll we just took, that's probably not particularly dark green right now. Border gateway control, you've got firewalls, you've got email gateways, you may have proxies that are doing content inspection and so on. But hopefully you feel pretty good about that. Over the last few years, we've seen the mobile devices come in. This is what I like to call the lightly managed environment. It's iOS, it's Android, it's Windows tablets, and so on. You've hopefully got an Intune doing MDM or an AirWatch or whatever it is that you use, and you can at least enforce levels of security on that. I want a PIN code. I want an encryption. I'm going to put MAM around the outside of applications. In the event it gets lost or someone leaves it on an airplane or something, you can disable that device, send a remote wipe to it, something along those lines. Then you got the nice gray box around the outside. This is what you don't know. This is files on OneDrive, consumer, Dropbox, box, USB keys, emails being sent. You don't know what's going on. We live in the gray box. This is where we live. This is where my engineering team works. This is what you don't know. This is where you don't know what's going on. This is what's hard. Data is everywhere. It's on premises. It's on PCs. It's on phones. It's in cloud. It's stored everywhere. And so the question really is, how do you live in that world when you don't know what's going on, be able to adhere to regulatory compliance, be able to adhere to business requirements to protect information, particularly if you're dealing with not only your own intellectual property, but also either your staff information. You've all got a government ID of some sort. You've got bank accounts so you can get paid. How does your business protect that information? If you're dealing with customer data, how do you protect that? And so the event, in the event of a breach, you can do something about it. And you can say, we know that the bad guys don't have our data because it's protected. And even if they've got the files, they can't open them. How do you get to that state? Okay, a little bit of the evolution. Who's used rights management in the past, either AD or Azure RMS? Good. You know this world pretty well then. This is where we can encrypt documents. This is where we can apply use rights, require authentication for the user account. This is where there's a policy enforcement to define what's going on. We've lived in this world since Server 2003 with Active Directory Rights Management, updated in 2008, refreshed in 2012, 2012 R2, and it's still in Server 2016. This is our on-premises traditional protection of information without the cloud kind of model. We brought Azure RMS to market, which allowed us to go into a cloud-based model where you could much easier turn it on. There was no hard deployment. You didn't have to do certificates. You didn't have to do keys. It just worked. We were able to bring mobile devices in around iOS and Android and put apps on all those different devices so you could share in a much easier way. We brought in, as part of Azure Rights Management, the ability to monitor and respond, the doc tracking portal, the ability to check a box when you share a document externally and say, I'd like to be able to revoke this in the event that something goes bad. Then when the document goes out, the user has to authenticate to open it. If something goes wrong and you see the picture on the map or you know that something's happened, you can go in and revoke access to that document and then no one can open it anymore. Okay? This is what we have in market today. Next week, we will be releasing the GA of Azure Information Protection. And that allows us to bring the full story together with classification and labeling on top of that as well. This is part of the Secure Islands acquisition that we took back in November last year, which allows us to apply metadata to documents, allow the user to identify the type of information they're working with, not going through six clicks within Office to get to the rights management template, which is a very IT-driven thing. File, info, protect, I've got a list of templates, I don't know which one to pick. It's a user-driven action that requires the user to say, I'm going to do all of that because I know I need to protect the information. With classification and labeling, it allows us to A, bring a nice, easy interface for the user to use, and B, guide the user to, rather than have to do that, just identify the type of information they're working with. Is it internal only? Is it part of a project I'm working on? Is it external, public ready? Whatever the words are you want to use, it puts it in the language of the end user and makes it easy. It also brings a rules and policy engine with it so that you can set rules and regulations by which that information will be classified and or protected, which means you can detect content. If I detect a credit card, I'm automatically going to take an action. If I detect a particular set of words, I'm going to make the user protect it. I'm going to take you through what those different capabilities are and how you can configure them and then what they look like as part of the demo as well. And so when you bring that all together, click, then we have the full data lifecycle from document creation all the way through what we want to do with it, and then ongoing modification as well, so that as the data changes, we can take additional actions. Just because a document was classified as internal only at one point in time doesn't mean it's always going to be. Take financial results, for example. Incredibly secret and incredibly locked down to a very small number of people until 4:59. And then at 5 o'clock, when the market closes, it's public. Goes from being 6 people in the world know what's inside that information to the entire world. All right? How do you manage that? How do you change that? So, my clicker is not working particularly well. What I'd like to do is take you through in a more real-world kind of way. I could talk ad nauseum in slides and talk about this around what you can do, but I'd like to take you more through a how can you get started kind of session, starting with classification and explaining what that is, and then going through 4 more add-on scenarios: automation, protection, at which point I will stop and do some demo, and then we'll talk more about reporting and collaboration after that. These are kind of the 5 key scenarios that you're able to now do with Azure Information Protection. Let's start with classification. What is it? It's basically the ability to label, and a label is a piece of metadata that travels with the document and allows you to put a tag on it to identify what it is. All of the labels that you're gonna see today are just demo ones that we do provide a default set. You can edit and change everything that I'm gonna show you. The colors you see, the words you see, the descriptions, the tooltips, the visual markings, everything you see is editable. We provide you with a set to get you going so you can play quickly and also give you some guidance around what works. But as my team works with a lot of customers, we've worked with Secure Islands previously, as well as with the preview customers that have been running it for the last few months. And I can say that most customers have a different set of labels. I've yet to see 2 that are exactly the same. So part of what we can help you with is what are the labels that you should use? Because that's the hard bit. This is a technology that is incredibly easy to deploy and use, but takes a lot of work to get the business on board as to what are the rules, what are the policies, what are the words you want to use. Is it just for everyone? Is it for finance? Is it for HR? Do you want to do everything at once and so on? And so we apply these labels, which allows us to then know this is the type of information I'm dealing with. In this case, on the screen, there's the public, internal, restricted, and confidential, and then off to the side is personal. If you allow your users to store personal information on your work machine, you probably want to allow them to say, ignore this, it's mine, okay? Because if you start to apply rules and regulations to their data, then that doesn't work so well. Maybe you come across a spreadsheet that's got budget information, but it's not work budget, it's their personal budget, just happens to be sitting on their OneDrive. What do you want to do about that? I don't know what the answer to that is, that's over for you. You could take control of that and say, well, you put it on a work machine, we're done. You could also allow them to override any rules you've got and say, no, that's mine, ignore it, park it over there. We can do rules, the users can complement that in terms of overriding it, in terms of doing a manual, and also we can do things like visual markings and so on, headers and footers and watermarks that I'm gonna show you all of that in action. So, I'm gonna go through 4 main user experiences. Automatic, this is where we do content detection. This is where you set a rule that says, I want to detect this type of stuff. Can be a word, can be a phrase, can be associated with a DLP style engine, which is a credit card or a social security number or government ID or whatever it is you're looking for. Or in the event that we don't have one ready built for you, you can use a regular expression and paste that in. So you're basically allowed to set a set of rules that says, if I find this, then I want to do that. And the then is over to you. You might want to apply protection, which is encrypt the document. You may just want to label it. You may want to put a visual marking on it. You may want to prompt the user, or you may just want to take control and do it automatically. Recommended is exactly that, but it only prompts the user. Same set of rules, same set of information, but instead of just taking the action, it says to the user, hey, I think I've found something that meets a policy that the business has set. We recommend that you click this button. It's still over to the user to make the final decision. And as you're starting to think about rolling this out, there's a line between recommended and automatic that may or may not apply to you, which is A, how much do you trust your users to make the right judgment? And B, how sure are you that you're detecting the right stuff? Somewhere in there is your right answer. We can help you work that through, but only you can answer that. But we give you the ability to either just take control and do it or prompt the user based on what you want to find. We can do justifications when users change things. So if we detect that something should be confidential because it meets a rule, and the user says, no, I want to change it to something else, you can prompt the user to say, why? And the key thing there is you're making the user make a deliberate choice. It's no longer, oops, I didn't know. No, you did know because you clicked the button and you typed the reason why you did it. So you're at least capturing and logging, and you're letting the user know, we know what you're doing and we're capturing it. Now, if the user's doing this for a genuine business reason, there won't be any fright in that. That's fine. I'm reclassifying this. It doesn't meet the requirements. We're good. But if someone's doing something they shouldn't be, they're probably going to realize that they're being watched, and they'll stop doing it. And then manual, which is exactly what it sounds like. The user just simply clicks a button and manually says, I'm going to identify what this is, and we're done. Make sense? If you're not, awesome. What are labels? They are metadata on documents, very literally. Word, Excel, PowerPoint, emails, those kinds of things. It is a custom field that turns up on the document. You can see them, you can view them. When you click a button, they turn up and with a bunch of information about who did it and when they did it, and I'll show you what that looks like. But basically, they are pieces of information that travel with the document. What that means is they are in clear text, and other DLP engines and other systems can read that metadata. If you have insert your DLP rule engine here, then they can read metadata on documents, which I've yet to see one that can't. It means that they can read that and take an action. And one of the demos I'm going to show you is when someone takes an internal document and tries to send it to an external recipient. Your gateway control should see that there's a document labeled as internal only and it's going to an external email address. Stop the email. Why should that go out? You've got a document that's very much only for internal people being sent to an external address. No, we're done. So your DLP engines, your border gateway controls, and so on can do that. And it travels with the document. It doesn't matter if you save it on your local PC and then upload it to SharePoint or send it in an email, put it on a USB key. The label goes with the document, and so does the protection if you applied it. All right, let's talk about protection. Now, most of you put your hands up with rights management, so you probably know all of this. For the vote, this is really for the people in the room. There's probably about a third of people who didn't put their hand up for rights management. So I'll just cover this, which is, what exactly is protection? It is the encryption of the document. We wrap the document and we apply a use rights policy to it. We can turn off things like the ability to it's too early in the morning. The ability to edit, to copy, to paste, not just as Brad, if you saw the Brad session between applications, but also inside the document as well. So I open a protected Word document, I may only be able to view that. I can't change the document, I can't screen copy it, I can't paste it. We are limited by what the operating system allows. Because we're integrated with Windows, we can stop screenshotting on Windows. We can't do much about an iPhone or an Android device because there's no way to stop that functionality. But the key thing here is to protect data that needs protection. With rights management, there was a one-size-fits-all approach, which was everything gets protected. If you turn it on, it's turned on, and you, whatever you want to do, you want to protect it. With classification and labeling, you may want to just label a document to identify what it is. You may not need to protect it. Protection is for the crown jewels. Protection is for information where you want to restrict who can open it and what they can do with it. If that doesn't apply, you don't need to protect the document. And so part of the analysis to do when you're thinking about deploying a solution like this is to identify what needs to be protected. What is the information that matters to the business? The intellectual property, the schema diagrams, secret formulas, whatever the case may be, customer information. What is it that is, to your business, going to be bad if someone who shouldn't have it gets a hold of it? Whatever that might be, that's what you want to protect. The way that this is done is you take something, your piece of information that you care about. We take a key, we put a license inside it that requires the authentication, we encrypt the document, and then there's a wrapper around the outside. If you send me a protected document, I double click on it. The first thing that happens is it wants to authenticate to say, is the person that got sent the document the person who can open it? If I can authenticate, I can then open it. Then the question is, what am I allowed to do with it? Okay. We pull that from the service. Now, this all gets done locally on the machine. This isn't a upload to the cloud, we process it and send it back to you model. This is everything's done locally on on the device, no matter what that is. And so the apps are used to protect and enforce the use rights. There is an SDK, there is an API. There are partners who have built additional products, such as Secure, who wrap around the outside of SAP, Foxit, and so on, who use our SDK and our API to embed this functionality inside your applications. And so there is an ecosystem there. If you have an internal line of business app and you want to be able to classify and label and protect, then we're going to provide you with an API to be able to plug that in and to be able to do the same things that we can. We never see the content. This is a common question that comes up when you protect a document. We never see that. We give the client the key and the ability to protect it. We never see that content. So just to answer that question. Okay. I think this is where we do some demo. Let's see this in action. Okay. So this is just a standard Windows 10 non-domain joined machine. It's literally just a VM that I booted up, installed Office, and installed our client add-in, and that's all there is to it. What I'm going to show you is, first of all, the admin console, just so you can take a look at how we set that up. I'm not going to spend hours in that. It's simply to show you what is there and the kinds of configuration that you can have. Then I'm going to flip over to the client side and show you how that lights up and take you through those different scenarios that we talked about. So we are based in the Azure portal, portal.azure.com. There is a Azure Information Protection blade, and so if you just type information, you will see us there. And this is where the magic starts to happen. So the first thing that I will show you, if I can drive the zoom, is that this is where you configure the labels that are going to show up. This is my demo set. You will have your own set. You can choose the color that it applies. You know, when you're working with users, they start to associate colors and words and things. So whether you use colors as your labels, we have customers that have red documents and blue documents and green documents. We have customers that use the labels more, whatever works for you. In this case, we have personal, public, general, restricted, and confidential. As you can see, there's a tooltip. That is what the user sees in the interface, so you can say, help the user understand. This is what the label is for, this is what it's going to do. You'll notice on the right-hand side that there is a green checkbox beside one of them for marking. That means that we are going to apply visual marking to that label. When I click that button, something is going to happen inside the document. A header, a footer, a watermark, whatever that might be. Now, you'll notice that there were carrots beside a couple of the option. So you can have sub-labels as well, and those turn up in the interface as a drop-down. So what you'll see is that when I click on restricted, it's actually got a sub-menu with different items, and so you can group these together. You don't want too many top-level items. You know, if you've got 10 options, it's hard for the user to realize which one it is. If you only got two options, it's too few. Somewhere in the middle, somewhere 3, 4, 5 is probably about right. And this allows you to break it down and to say, well, when it's restricted, what does that mean? Does it mean is it restricted to the whole company? Is it restricted just to my team? You can configure as many of these as you want, and you can also apply protection. And so the protection is Azure Rights Management. So for those of you that have used that previously and you're using Rights Management today, all that work is still valid. We're just making it much easier for the users to contain and to do it automatically as well. Within each of those, and if I take one that's got both, let's take a look at the credit card data as I wait for that blade to open up. Actually, let me just go back a sec. There's a couple of settings down the bottom here that are valid. Sorry, let me see if I can get the mouse down. No, it's not going to let me zoom down. No, fine. There are two settings down the bottom there. One is whether you want to set a default, and so you can, as a business, say, every new document that is created is automatically going to be tagged with this label. It means that no matter what, every document that's created from that point forward has a label. You can start with somewhere in the middle, you can start high, you can start low, however you want to do it, but it means that there's never going to be a document created that has no label. Okay? We will be providing ways for you to scan document repositories and various other things. That is on the roadmap. That is another FAQ just to answer that one. You can also, right down the bottom left, unfortunately my Zoom is not allowing me to go down there, is an option that requires the user to do justification. And so that's the checkbox that says, hey, you're changing the label to something else, why? Okay, so you can turn that on. If I move across to the credit card label and policy, A, you can enable it or disable it. So basically, you could have a number of labels that are either disabled or enabled. You can bring that through depending on how you're doing your rollout. You can choose whether you want to apply a rights management template. Now, you'll notice there's two buttons there, Azure RMS on the left-hand side and AD RMS on the right. We're going to talk about key management towards the end of the talk, but this allows you to choose when the button is clicked and you want to apply rights management. Am I pulling it from a template in the cloud, or am I running AD RMS on-premises where I have the key and you want to hold your own key and it gets protected using that? Okay, there are limitations when you do it on-premises. It won't work for mobile devices and a bunch of other things. But if you've got super secret information that you never want to leave your data center, must be on the corporate network to be able to open, and you really want to put a box around that and tightly control it, that's the button that allows you to do it, and we'll talk more about the key management there. We can also set the visual marking. And so this is where you get to say, is there a header, is there a footer? You'll notice that there are some fields defined there, classified by dollar username, dollar principal name, and so on. This allows you to dynamically mark the document so that if I protect the document or I classify the document, it's got my name on it. It means that if someone prints it, someone puts it up on a screen, whatever the case may be, you know who it was, okay? And so that's the rationale behind that. Excuse me. And then there are conditions. And conditions are where you get to set the rules, okay? So in this one, I'm using a built-in rule for credit card numbers. And basically what this rule states is if I find at least one credit card, it applies. Okay, you can set number of instances. I could see a scenario where it's like if there's one credit card, maybe it gets be restricted. If it's got three credit cards and it gets a different label, whatever the case may be. Whatever your rule is, you get to say, how many times do I need to see this? Take the word secret, all right? Sometimes that's just used in normal language. Like, it's got nothing to do with confidential information. It's just the word secret. Hey, I know a secret. Okay. That shouldn't be protected. But if you see the word secret three times, then there's a pattern coming through. Okay, so this is where the rules engine becomes very interesting. We provide a number of built-in rules, or, as I mentioned earlier, in the event that you have something that is not provided by the built-in rules, you can do a phrase match. This can be a word, this can be a series of phrases, or it can be a regular expression. And so if you put a regular expression in that box and check the match as a regular expression option, it will do exactly that. It will apply your regular expression and go looking for content. Okay? So that is really the way that it works. You configure your labels, you configure your policies. I don't want to save that, correct? And those are published down. You can make changes. So for example, if I come along and add a new label, let's just call it BRK. What are we in? 2128, something like that. And save that. You'll notice on the right, on the left-hand side, there's a big yellow bar that comes up that says, hey, you've made a change, but you haven't published it yet. Until I click the publish button, it will not show up in the client. As soon as I click the publish button, it will. Okay. Awesome. Any questions on that? Make sense? Yes? Do we support what, sorry?
For the labels
and the tips, do we support language? Okay, do we support multi-language? Yes. As a Microsoft product, in order to ship a product, there is a minimum set of languages to have to support. I believe the number is 44 and 72, so I think while we're in, there's something, I think it's when we're in preview, we have to support 44, and then after GA, we have to go to 72, or something along those lines. But there is a minimum set of languages that are supported, yes. We have to. Yeah, good question. Yes?
Are you able to detect the label from on-prem DLP solution? So if an on-prem DLP solution is able to inject a piece of metadata that says confidential, would you then be able to say, okay, we're going to treat this with whatever label you decide?
So the question was, if something else has already put a label on the document, are we able to read that label and react? The answer to... a piece of metadata. The answer is the inverse today. We can put the label in and they can read us. Secure Islands had the ability to detect other things, and we will continue to build out functionality. The requests that we hear from customers are things like, if it's already got something, can we read that? If it's in a certain location, like it's on Dropbox, it's on Box, it's on OneDrive, it's in a file share, it's on a SharePoint server, React in different ways. We will continue to take feedback on all of that. Those are all things that preview customers have already asked for. So, yep, the answer is not today, but definitely it is a feature request that we have, yep. Okay, I'm gonna jump across to the client here and show you what that lights up at the other end. So I'm gonna use Word by way of demo, and I'm going to create a new document. A couple of things that I will point out immediately. One is, in this particular scenario, I have set the default label to be general, and so as you can see, the sensitivity is set to general by default just by creating a new document. Okay. The button bar that you see at the top there, those are all the buttons that we saw in the admin console. And as I pointed out, there was a number of drop-downs for things like restricted, and there is the subcategories that we're able to see in the admin console. When I hover over one of those, you will see the tooltip pops up, and that's the information that we saw in the admin console. And so this is how you can help guide your users when you do user training to say, if you're not sure which one it is, hover the mouse over it briefly, and we'll give you a description of what this label actually is and what it does. And so that is a default label that is there, and it is general. So what I'm going to do is actually say, actually, the document I'm creating is public. And what you'll see is we automatically pop up a window that says you're changing the classification. You're lowering the classification from being a general business document to being public. Why? They can either click the label doesn't apply, it's just a generic out, or they can explain themselves. And that allows you to capture why they were making that change, and that is now captured in the logs. So two demos I want to show you. The first is a recommendation. So I have, as I get a spinning donut of death, oh, I see what's happening. I have, courtesy of PayPal, if you go to PayPal, they've got if you're doing demos like this or testing, they provide you with all the test credit cards that you can use. So these are numbers that are provided by the different credit card vendors and business banks and so on around the world, and they are able to be tested, and they will actually respond to the algorithm. So I've got some credit card numbers in there, and I'm going to save this document. Just going to save this locally. We'll just call it credit card and save. What you'll see is that we have a yellow bar pop up, and this text is configurable, which is, hey, we've detected a credit card in here. I'll come back to your question after the demo if it's okay. We've got some credit card data, it's been detected, and we are recommending that this document be restricted, and a button that says change now. So this is a recommendation. Rules engine, condition kicked in, found something that meets a rule, and prompting the user to make the final decision. I could choose to ignore it, in which case that doesn't really go away, or I can click change now. Click change now. And what you'll see is, for demo purposes, I've got this lovely purpley, pinky kind of label there. I don't think you should do that in the real world, but for demo purposes, it shows up very well. We've got a watermark there, and I've also got a header up the top. If I go to the backstage, what's also happened is we have applied a credit card data rights management template as well. Okay, so simply by saying yes to the prompt, we have automatically protected that information by detecting it, but allowed the user to make the final decision. Okay, now I'll create a new document so that we can do a different one. And I have a project, there it is. I have a project set up, and I have a rule that is looking for the words, this is secret. So I'm just gonna save that one and place that here and save. Now what you'll see is that the user, I did nothing other than save the document. And so basically what we've done here is automatically protected that document, automatically labeled, the user did nothing. Okay, fully automatic. Matched the condition, applied a rights management template, applied the label, the user did nothing, and we've put a visual marking over the top, fully automatic. So that's the default label, the justification. We've seen the recommended, which is the I found something, make the user make the final decision, and the fully automatic. Okay. Now I'm going to create one last document that I'm not going to do a lot with other than move to email. So I am going to just type some text, it doesn't really matter what it is, and I'm going to say that this is restricted to just my team, and I'm going to save that. Now I'm going to try and do something that really emulates what some users try to do, which is pass off information as something that it's not. So this is just normal info, okay? Saving it as a document name that looks pretty basic and so on. I've saved it, I've labeled it. It could be protected, it could not be protected. It doesn't actually matter for this this demo. But basically what we've done is now said, it's restricted to my team, but I'm gonna try and get it to someone external to look at. So I'm gonna make that and I'm gonna save it. And close this all down and move across to Outlook. So I'm gonna create a document. I am using a demo tenant. I'm gonna try and send this to my own Microsoft account. And I am going to say, this is just some boring info. Now bear in mind, this is a document that I've labeled as internal only. I'm going to attach that file. This is just normal info. And just some boring info. And send that out. Now we'll let that go out. It's gonna send a message. That message has been sent. What I've done is configured a DLP rule on Office 365 to say, if you see a label that is considered to be internal, do not let that mail out, okay? So that has been sent. Let's see if I can hurry this up a little bit. And I am going to get an email back, hopefully, if the demo works. Usually it's pretty quick. What's that? I'm sorry, I can't. Compressed file. That's a good question. That's an Office 365 question. I don't know how whether the Office 365 DLP rule looks inside zip files or not. Sorry, I don't know the answer to that. All right, that's taking a little while to come through. We will come back. Yes? So if it's protected, so is your question relating to if it's protected or the rule?
The rule. So you're creating a document that's for your team only. Eventually, it has to be a backup by some type of developer.
Yeah.
So
the question is relating to the rule and whether administrators and backup apply. So when you configure a DLP rule, you get to configure who it applies to. So in this case, I have a catch-all rule, which is if it gets sent from any user and it's going to external, apply the rule. Within the DLP rule engine, you get to specify who it's sent to and from. So you could exclude those accounts if they're like, okay, I need that to not apply. All right, that's taking just a little bit too long. So in the archive, I think I have one. I have one I created earlier. It's a cooking show. And basically, this is what comes back. A bounce back from the mail administrator to say, you tried to send something that is internal only to an external. You've attempted to send documents classified, confidential to my team, to an external recipient. Stop. Okay. It's just an example of how you can take something as simple as a label and use it within other systems around to say it's not only the document itself, you want to detect what it does. And it doesn't really matter what your DLP engine is. I'm using Office 365 because it's part of my tenant. You could be using another one and it would still be there. So that's a look through. There was a question?
Thank you.
I'll paraphrase your ask into a broader feature request that we already have, which is, can I do something with the justification other than going down and prompting generically? Today, no. Today, it is a downward rule, which is basically if you lower the classification, you will get prompted. We have a number of asks at a feature level from many customers and many different variations of what you just asked, which is, can I insert some rule here around justifications and workflow to do whatever the outcome is they're looking for? We have that captured as a feature request. Yep. Oh, gosh, there's lots of questions. What's time? All right, we'll take three questions. One, two, three. So the question was, will we be able to see the classification and label and or protection in the Windows Explorer UI? Today in the preview, no. We will be adding that very, very shortly. It's two.
How does this apply to OneDrive and SharePoint?
How does this apply to OneDrive and SharePoint? So we are working with those teams. So SharePoint can see our label. So if you store a labeled document in a SharePoint library, you can add a column, which is the sensitivity metadata label, and you can see it. Once you can see it in SharePoint, then usual SharePoint rules apply. OneDrive for Business being based on SharePoint, same thing applies. We have not done anything with the OneDrive consumer at this point in time. That's actually the first time that one's come up. Great. And there was one more question over there, sorry. I got loads of time afterwards and also down in the expo hall all week, so we will get all questions answered. Yes?
How do your scenarios work out with the device has no connectivity?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
How does it work out with no connectivity?
How does it, oh, with no connectivity. Oh, let me rephrase. Does it work offline? Yes. Basically, when the client launches, it downloads all of the rules. You could turn off connectivity from that point forward, all the same rules and so on apply. Inversely, there is one scenario where connectivity is required, and it's if you check the box that says, I want to be able to revoke this document. That requires the user to have a connection, because the way that we revoke access is to say, the next time you authenticate, the answer is no. Okay. So basically, if you turn that one on, then connectivity is required. Otherwise, we pull it down, we do it all locally. Okay. I will come back to all of the questions, I promise we will get all questions answered. Let's talk about some of the things that are additional to that. Reporting. Clicker's really not working. So the monitoring and responding, following on from the question that was just asked. When you share a document, and this is part of Azure Rights Management Premium today, you have the option when you share it to say you want to be able to track it and you want to be able to revoke it. You can go to the document tracking portal. You get to see when someone opened it. You get to see where in the world they were to our best approximation. You can see the map there. You can optionally take an email every time around someone opening it and all those kinds of things. And in the event that something goes wrong, you can click the revoke button and then they can't open that document anymore. So that allows to see users to be able to see what's going on. We are working on the logs and reporting for Azure Information Protection. There will be more on this in the very near future, a lot more information around how you, as administrators and so on, can get access to what's going on and get reports and so on. So not a lot to just say there, but very shortly we'll have more. Excuse me. And then collaboration. So the way when you do the sharing, here's what actually happens. I'm sorry. Just going to take a drink. So, in the scenario that's on the slide, we have Sue, who wants to share a document, but in two different ways. She wants Bob to be able to view the document and print it, and so it goes up to the top right-hand corner for an internal user. And she wants to let Jane edit the document and print it. And so basically, it's one document with a use rights policy that lists out Bob and Jane and says, Bob can do this, and Jane can do something else. Goes to each one, requires the user to authenticate. We have apps for all the different platforms, iOS, Mac, Android, Windows, and so on, which allows you to consume that protected document and apply authentication. Excuse me. The authentication, we use Azure Active Directory. Whether that is a full sync, a partial sync, only based in the cloud, or whether it's through an ad hoc sign-up, anyone in the world, my mum could go and sign up for a free tenant or a free user. It's very seamless to the user, I think. I think we've got it down to 3 or 4 clicks, and basically she would rock along, she would enter her email address, and away we go. And that enables us to do authentication against those documents. It can come back down on premises if you are using a federated service to require authentication back on. It doesn't make a difference in that scenario. Following on, architectures. So a little bit on topology, and then we can get back to some questions as well. So we have a requirement for Azure Rights Management and therefore Azure Information Protection as well to have a minimum of 11 attributes that are synchronized to the cloud. 3 of them you should care about, 8 of them you should not. The 3 that you should care about are very simple: first name, last name, and email address. That's it. If you're worried about syncing those 3 things to the cloud, then I'm guessing you've turned off external email, right? Because if you send an external email, you get those 3 pieces of information. So if you're not, if you are worried about synchronizing those pieces of information to Azure AD, I assume you have no external email. If you use external email and are worried about syncing those 3 things, then we should have an interesting discussion, because it's kind of the same thing. In fact, it's harder to get that information. And then the other 8 attributes are machine data kind of stuff that allows us to do the work that we need to do. You can use the RMS connector, which allows you to consume that service back down to on-premises, SharePoint, Exchange, file servers for FCI, that kind of thing, so you can have your on-prem assets protected as well. There, you can use sync against Windows Server Active Directory, and then optionally, if you have a federated service such as ADFS, then you can require those authentication requests to come back down. We already talked about the data not going up. Everything's done locally on the client. Now, there is a variation of that for highly regulated environments. And this is something that is new that we've just started, that we released in the last couple of months. You saw it with the ADRMS in preview button inside the admin console. There are 3 key models for the encryption of the documents. There's the I'm just going to let Microsoft take care of it model, which is it's in Azure RMS, you just use the service, you're done. There is the BYOK, bring your own key. This is the Azure key Vault, where we have HSM devices inside our data centers. It's HSMs as a service, effectively. You bring your key, you store it in our HSMs, it's a service. You have full control over that. They are in HSMs, and if you know about HSMs, they are tamper-proof and all those kinds of things. Inside the data centers, they're segmented and all the different security restrictions that you would expect around HSM devices. If that is not sufficient, we now have hold your own key, and that is your data center, your HSM device, your key. You have total control, okay? And when you have a button that is configured to use ADRMS with hold your own key, when a user clicks it, it goes to Active Directory Rights Management, applies that using your key and your templates. We see nothing. We can't do anything with that. In the event that someone gets your document, it's going to have to come and authenticate back down to on-premises and those kinds of things. It's for a highly regulated environment where you must hold your own key. It's not this, it has restrictions. Okay, when we wrote the blog post, we were pretty clear that this is not the magic source that makes all your problems go away. That has a lot of restrictions. You want it on premises. You want it segmented. You got it. Exactly what it says. On premises and segmented. No mobile support, no sharing, all those kinds of things. You just said you want it on-prem, in your control, and no one else can see it. You got it. Okay? And so it is very, very appropriate for a limited number of scenarios. That it was a need from some very highly regulated customers. If you are one of them, you should talk to us about it. It takes some setup, and we need to help you with that, but it is definitely there. So getting started, thinking about how you go from where you are to kicking the tires and getting started. If you have Azure Rights Management already running, then the third option is basically already there for you and you're layering over some other stuff. If you have nothing, here's what we basically go through and what my team spends a lot of time doing. First up, what are your classification policies? What are the buttons that you are going to have? You saw I had some configured and the user showed up. Well, what are the buttons that you want your users to see? That will actually take you quite a bit of time based on our experiences. There's lots of internal debates, there's lots of arguments. Sometimes the CISO can just say, these are what they are and we're done. Sometimes there's arguments, sometimes there's like, well, I want A and they want B, and somewhere in the middle is the answer. So that's going to take some time. What are the buttons you want to have, and what are the rules and what are the policies you want to apply? I showed you detecting words and phrases and credit cards and so on. What are the things that you want to detect, if you want to detect? What are the colors you're going to use? What are the restrictions on what's going to apply? If I click that button, is this protected? Is this not protected? Does it apply a policy? How many instances are required of anything we detect? All these kinds of things need to be configured. We give you a set of that to get started, and it's a recommended set, which is, in the event of no other answer, this is a very good answer. And I think it's there's public, general, protected, restricted, there's like five buttons that we provide. That will get you going. And for a lot of customers, it's perfectly the right answer. They don't have a data policy today. They don't label anything today. It gets them going. They're good to go. We can get you up and running very quickly. Questions around automation. What is it you want to detect? What do you want to do with it? Do you want to protect it? Gaining insights through reporting as we light all of those things up. What are the pieces of information you want? We have the an Azure Information Protection booth. If you have reporting needs, we would very much love to hear what are the reports you would actually like to see. You know, there's some obvious ones around who's protecting what and how many documents were of each one and who changed the classification and so on. But we would love to hear from you guys, what are the reports you'd love to see? What is the base set on a dashboard that you're like, I need this? And we're going to be very clear with you and say, are you telling me that you won't deploy without that? Or are you telling me that it would be nice to have in a month's time, in 6 months' time, hey, it'd be nice if you do it? We will push back and we will interrogate and say, how much do you want this? Yeah. If I send a warm body to your business and say, let's deploy to 5,000 or 10,000 people and I'll provide the resource to do that, are we good? Are we going to go? Are you going to wait for that feature? What are you going to do? We want to hear the feedback of what that looks like. And then collaboration. Do you need or want to share protected documents between organizations? Whether it's a sister organization, whether it is a completely different one, there is a session coming up on Wednesday afternoon that if you're interested in sending protected information to your customers, you should definitely go and see that session. I'm going to tell you about that next. So, what else have we got going on? You are at the top of that list. This is BRK 2127, which is the overview one. We have another theater session at 12 o'clock, which would be very interesting to go to, where we're digging into particular scenarios and lighting up a little more color around some of these things. Eyal is running the BRK 3095 session. He's going to deep dive into the classification, labeling, and protection. If you want to take a really good look into how the admin console works, how the client actually works, what's going on, he's really going to pull that apart. And if you want a deep dive, if you're going to be responsible for deploying this, you want to go to his session at 12:30 tomorrow. And then Gagan and Ian are going to do the protect and share data externally. If you have a need to share information with external customers in particular, you definitely want to go to that session. They're going to go very deep into some very cool new stuff. They're going to show you some stuff for the very first time. I'm not even going to tell you what it is. You should go along and take a look. And then we have General Motors here on Friday. General Motors are one of the customers that my team has been working with for quite a while. And Jeff's going to come along and give you an insight into what they've actually been doing. They are a large user of our technologies. And they've been, frankly speaking, you know, they've found some bugs for us. We've done some features for them. They can give you an understanding of what the engagement looks like and how we've responded and how they have approached doing this kind of thing and what their plans are. Some very good and interesting information about General Motors and how they think about protecting information. There's a bunch of stuff here that are in the slides in terms of doing a trial, going and seeing other parts of the EMS suite and so on. These are all published and available, and I would please ask to give us evaluation and feedback so that we can make sure we're giving you the right information. I wanted to finish up just a little bit ahead of time, which we have. We have a few minutes left to be able to answer questions. If there's extra demo things you want to see, I thank you for that, and if anyone wants to leave, that'd be cool, but if you want to hear the questions and stuff, I think we've got a lot more information to cover, so Thank you. All right, let's do some questions. Down the back was first. I'm sorry, I cannot hear you in any way, shape, or form. Can we just wait until we... I honestly can't hear your voice at all. Sorry. Yeah, if you...
I have two questions. Yeah. First one is with all the work on machine learning and everything that we're doing, auto-classification, where I have a group that starts working on a project that I haven't captured in any way or form in my classifications, the machine learning picks up the keywords for that project and auto classifies it as a project. Is that coming?
Yeah, so it's a good question around, not particularly in the machine learning. I think it's more from there's a couple of asks from customers around detecting and scanning existing repositories of information. And so the short answer is we're doing a lot of work in that space, and you'll see more about that real soon.
Okay, my second question is being a good information security practitioner, wanting to imbue that into every user's normal life as well, if someone classifies something as personal, can we switch it to use their like personal live ID or anything like that so that that protection extends to their home life as well?
Short answer to that one is no. The question was, if I label it as personal, maybe still protecting it, but moving it to their live ID or some other thing. Short answer is no on that one, but that's an interesting scenario. I'll take a note of that one. Great. Yes, you were there.
So my question was around classification rules assigned to groups. So for example, legal would be confidential.
Yep.
But marketing, maybe it prompts them.
Yep.
So we
will have scoped policies in the admin console very soon.
And you had mentioned, for example, Sue wants to share with Jane and Bob differently. Would that apply also to groups or just individuals?
It can be groups or individuals. So when you apply the protection, you can use an individual's name if you want to get nitty, or you can apply it to an entire group. So I can send an email to an entire DL and lock it down, for example.
And just one last quick one, which
sure.
is, so we roll it out, we have the five classifications, we realize we need to add a six or we need to move them.
Yep.
Do we use PowerShell or other systems to say, I'm going to take these documents and put them over?
So there's a couple of parts to that. The first is if you add something to the admin console, the next time the app launches, it picks up the new label. So it happens in real time. And so basically, if I added a sixth label to the admin console and relaunched Word, the button turns up straight away. If you wanted to retrofit that label to existing documents, this is the scanner capability that Secure Islands has today, and we're working on pulling that across as well, which would enable you to have a rule that says, go scan that big lump of documents over there. If you find this, change it to something else. Yeah, and that includes updating the PowerShell commandlets to do the same thing as well. Yeah, good question. Yes?
So this is less of a technical question. You know, you mentioned before that Azure RMS is pretty easy to set up, which it is, but the harder part is getting the business on board in terms of deciding what labels belong to what content. Does Microsoft have any documentation on guiding that conversation to people who are very unfamiliar with these concepts?
You just described why my team exists. So what you just described is what my team do all day, every day, with customers all around the world. So I don't know if there are plans to publish that as a best practices.
Sure.
My personal observation, having 13 people on my team who do this every day, is I've never seen two customers do it the same way twice. Now, what we do, though, is help you with the conversation, which is, okay, let's help you have the conversation with the business around what are those big lumps. Because when you go from, I've got five bottles of water, to actually there's only two, that's much simpler, right? And so we are building up a lot of knowledge around that. I don't know whether we'll publish that. Certainly any customer that we engage with, either through Fast Track or through and my team one-on-one, which are there for more of the larger customers, we certainly use that as the conversation starter, which is, do you have a data classification policy today, right, written down or something?
Sure.
99% of customers say, well, we've kind of got this thing and we kind of do some things. It's not really nice. We help them work through that. And what I typically say is, let's go on site to your place for 2 days of workshops. We work through that, we bash it out, we whiteboard it, we get at least to a set which we can do a concept around. And then you get it out and start testing it, and you take feedback, you do, you know, your group tests and so on. That is what takes the most amount of time. We can turn the technology on. I think the record is 16 minutes from nothing to a completely working everything you just saw. Doing it by hand, not even automated. 16 minutes. That's not the hard bit. The hard bit is what are the buttons you want, and what are the rules you want, and what are you going to protect? That's the hard bit. Great for partners. No problem. Here to help.
So the question earlier was on multiple languages and how all that works. Is there any kind of integration coming down the line with Translate so that if I say that this phrase is a protected phrase, that it's translated into 42 languages?
You know, I must say I watched and I saw for the first time myself some of the keynote stuff around translation and stuff, and we took a lot of notes. I saw some of that for the first time myself. So I think translation is something that we should look at in terms of not only how do we detect in different languages, but it's the phraseology around in one language, this phrase means something, and in a different language, a direct translation means nothing, but it's the intent behind that phrase that matters. I think there's lots of opportunity there. Is there anything directly planned? No, but we saw some awesome stuff yesterday that got us really excited from an engineering point of view.
Thank you.
No problem.
Hi, Dan. The visual marking,
yes.
Compatibility, is it just Microsoft applications or PDFs? Or?
So we've got Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and Outlook today. We are actively working on PDF and CAD. Statistically speaking, that seems to hit about 80% of all document types that we see in customers, the different types of CAD drawings and those kinds of things, PDF and Office docs. Beyond that, we'll probably look to the partner ecosystem to continue to build out that massive long tail of other document types. The only limitation really is it needs to be a binary document. So if you take like a text document, for example, you cannot attach metadata to a text document. It's not possible. And so therefore, we can't do those. But today, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and Outlook, so that's email and the primary Office docs, PDF and CAD are hot on their tails.
Thank you.
No problem. Hey.
A few months ago, for the Bring Your Own Key, Exchange Online was not supported. Is it the case today?
Can you just say that first bit again, sorry?
Yeah, for Bring Your Own Key.
Oh, Bring Your Own Key, yes.
So, a few months ago,
Exchange
Correct. Online was not supported.
Correct.
We had to make a choice to use RMS. So, is it the case?
We are moving Exchange Online customers across to Bring Your Own Key right now. So, we have preview customers that are actively doing that now. And we will, once we get things sorted and we've finished with the preview customers, it will roll out everywhere. So, that is on its on the path already.
So basically, do you have a expected timeline? Or?
I would need to check on that, sorry. I know that we are actively working with the preview customers and moving their keys right now. I'm starting to see the telemetry come through for that, which means there's a fair amount of customers on it. So it's like imminent now. If you have a desire to be quick, please send me a mail and I will hook you up with Praveen, who is driving that piece of work.
Okay, thanks a lot.
No problem.
Hi, is there any thoughts about moving to like compound labels? So you might have a label of confidential, but then you might have a project code name that goes with it, and that would be the second part of the label, or it might be confidential medical, confidential financial.
Great question, and one that has come up many times.
I can imagine mostly in the government, federal type spaces.
There's a number of industries where it accounts. Good examples, there's different variations of that. There's, I don't want project / FUBAR, I want project and then FUBAR to be two different labels, not concatenated. That's one model. There's also the billing kind of scenario of customer name and an IO code or something to go with it, or a project code to go with it. There's many different variations. We don't have it today. It is a feature request that is building momentum. Part of my team's role is to capture these feature requests, put customer names against them so that we can help prioritize investments. people who have that requirement. I would love to have customer names and seat counts to go with it so that I can work with my engineering code development teams and say, I can bring you X customers with Y seats and therefore help prioritize those kind of features.
And is there any view that there are customers who may not be particularly keen on using the whole Azure control set? I'm thinking, again, federal government-type mm-hmm. customers. Is there going to be a way to allow those customers to use the technology, which they probably love to use,
mm-hmm.
but without having it Azure-based?
It's a tough one. There are a very, very small set of customers that have said to us, we don't even want to use the admin console to create the labels. It is a very, very small number of customers that can legitimately ask that and say, we can't do that. We're not legally allowed. We are talking to those customers about what that looks like. There is an export capability, so you can use the console, export that config, and deploy it. We haven't fully tested that. Does it work? Seems to. It's not fully tested or supported. Is it something we're prioritizing? No.
Okay. I can imagine it's a small number of customers, but there might be some fairly significant seat counts.
That is potentially the case. And so it's one of those we're monitoring very closely to see, is that where we want to go? One thing we're pretty clear on is that we have no intention of providing on-premises management capability, so the ability to create all of this completely offline. That right now is not even on our radar in any way, shape, or form. The vast majority of customers are comfortable at least using the admin console to be able to create the labels and create the policies. And the biggest sticking point for those customers is they won't even sync the 11 attributes, in which case we stop. Because without those 11 attributes being synchronized, we don't work.
Thanks.
Yeah.
How does this sit with the Adalom acquisition?
So Adalom is CAS.
Yep.
So the CAS can read our label. Mm-hmm. And so basically you can configure a rule and a report and all those kinds of things. I think they call it a policy, right? You can configure a rule/policy and a report, and they call it file tag. And so if you have a look in CAS, there is an option to set a policy based on file tag. That is our label. So that is the first integration we've already done with CAS.
Okay, any future roadmap that you may have? With...
What do you mean by that? What is your feature request?
We're sort of looking into the whole CASB space
right
now. And it's a case of obviously looking at what integrates with our own roadmap and timescales. It's for third-party sharing, we can see where that can come into a great deal of information.
Good. So that is using a SaaS application to share a document to another person?
Yeah, JV, partner, acquisition, okay. M&A, you name it.
So CAS can already, I think it was CAS. I need to be careful what I say there. I saw the demo of it. I think it was CAS. Already has the ability to respond and remove the sharing capabilities in the event that you want to. I think once they read our tag, you can do whatever you want. And so if you are controlling those SaaS apps through CAS and you have a file tag policy, then you are already empowered to say yes, no, report, whatever the case may be. I think if you have some very specific use cases, Hayden and I would love to hear what they are. Hayden is the my equivalent. She runs the CAS and ATA CXB team. So between us, we would love to have any very specific scenarios you have for IP and CAS.
Okay, thanks.
Great.
Yeah. Hi, I got just a question around more of the metadata.
Mm-hmm.
My organization deals with a lot of photos, take a lot of photos of a lot of things. Can you edit the metadata so that if this is a customer or this is somebody who hasn't signed and an agreement to have their photo taken, I'm getting a nod, so I'm gonna assume that's okay.
I know where your question is going. So we don't have tamper detection on the labels today.
Okay.
So if it was labeled like I just did and then someone went and hacked it to something else,
okay.
Then we can't detect the fact that it's been hacked.
Okay.
Where that kicks in is to say, If you're worried about that, you should protect the document because you've just actually outlined something which is, this is sensitive to us and we want to make sure that the wrong people can't get it. That's protection.
Sure.
It's come up a couple of times, so we are tracking a feature request for putting some sort of hash or algorithm that says, oh, the label was internal, we capture a bit of gobbledygook with it that allows us to say if you change it, it doesn't match anymore. That is a feature request we're currently tracking.
Yeah, we sometimes have to flag photos for people who are either our patients who are okay with being photos taken, versus the patients that we've taken photos of that are not okay with it.
Got it.
And
if someone changes that, that's a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So, okay.
We are tracking that as a feature request. Again, you know, the data that helps us prioritize is like company names and seat counts, basically.
Okay.
The more data you can help me with, the more chance you've got of prioritizing it because we correlate that and track that in the Visual Studio so that it's like, all right, which feature should we build next?
Sure.
The more people that ask for something, the more chance it has of getting done.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
No worries. Thank you. Hi.
I have two questions. How is there a migration path? I mean, how can I label my documents on the Office 365 environment, the existing documents?
So the scanning of existing repositories is something we're working on now. I can't give you a definitive time frame, but the ability to scan existing information and be able to label it is something that's in progress.
And the other one is the SharePoint integration. On the SharePoint, I can say based on the library, I can apply RMS templates, and then I also activate the Azure Information Protection, then I have a mixture of both, and it doesn't seem really...
The IRM library protection came in, I think it was like SharePoint 2007.
Yeah.
Frankly speaking, at this point in time, it's a feature we tell customers not to turn on. It's good for two use cases. All data is homogenous, or all users accessing it are homogenous. It's the only time it's good. Other than that, our sort of positioning moving forward, and we need to update the products to reflect it, is label and protect each document individually when it meets a criteria, not a one size fits all. And so what you'll see is that we want to move to a model which is, oh, a document is labeled as internal, it goes into a particular location, it should kick on. Excuse me. That's what we are talking to the office team about, that is our intent moving forward. It will take us a little bit of time, we're going GA next week and then we've got some work to do, but what you are describing is very much in line with our intent.
Thank you.
No problem, thank you.
Question. So you demoed the FAT client plugins to do classifications. Is that also available in OWA, the online apps, and things like that?
Great question.
Version of Outlook?
So we have some clients to do. We need to update the Office apps. They currently can consume protection. We need to figure out what to do with labels on those as well. Personally, I look at the UI and go, how would you surface a label inside like iOS for the word on iOS? I'm like, how do you actually do that? I don't know. We need to look at that. We need to look at Mac. And we are going to be working with the Office team to light up OWA and Word and Excel and PowerPoint Online and those kinds of things as well.
Okay, so the roadmap.
Absolutely, yeah. You should rest assured that all potential ways to consume labels and protection need to be updated. Yes.
Hi, with regards to the information protection between organization and Azure RMS, et cetera, what happens if the other organization has a different mail server, such as Google Apps or whichever that may be? I'm not even talking about the personal use, consumer use, but I'm talking about organization use of Google, what have you, Domino, IBM, whichever.
You should go to Gagan and Ian's session tomorrow afternoon because they're going to cover exactly that. I'll give you the top line answer, which is when it's within the Microsoft ecosystem, it's just going to work and it's going to be an awesome experience. When it is on another mail platform and other things are in play, there will still be an experience. It may not be as seamless, it's still as seamless. It may not have all the same features and functionality, but they are going to go through in depth what you just described.
So it's coming. It's down the road somewhere?
You should go to their session.
All right. Cool.
I don't want to steal their thunder. They're going to show you some cool stuff, though. It's awesome. Cool. Well, thank you, guys. That was an interesting session. Great questions, and I appreciate the time. Enrique's here, and we're going to be down on the booth and hanging out, so please, love to hear your feedback, your questions, your feature requests, all that kind of stuff. It's all goodness. So thanks for staying around extra for the questions. Cheers, guys.